Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Gosh, I'm glad that little morsel of broadcasting genius wasn't broadcast there from a moment ago while we were off air. You are listening to Fender Bender. It is a wonderful Saturday afternoon, and you're joined not by the usual Tim Nicholson, but by Daniel Gardner for reasons I will explain in a moment. Thank you so much to Joe and Mark for another wonderful edition of Escape Pod. Now, to matters of business. I know you are tuning in expecting to hear the wonderful smooth sound of Tim Nicholson introducing his usual guests, but he is at large. He is elsewhere in the world doing his wonderful part for all that is motoring in none other than Tokyo for the motor show. This is a silly season, the silliest of seasons. There's lots of motor shows going on around, so I had to take the helm, but I'm not doing it alone. I don't have to bear this burden by myself. I am joined by one of Fender Bender's favourite guests, Mike Costello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being with us,
well,
Mike.
It was a lucky piece of timing, really, because I've also been in Tokyo, but I got back Thursday, so I'm back in Australia mode and here to talk about the wonderful event that Tim is still at.
I know, at large. Well, it's great to have you. You know, there was a moment when I was worried you wouldn't come back at all, actually, because you quite liked it, didn't you, I think?
Well, you know, I've kind of come back and people have been commenting since I came back. I'm busting out into random Japanese phrases. I only know, like, two phrases, so it's kind of a sad repeat of the same two phrases over and over again, but the culture did kind of draw me in.
But you do this every time.
I had a great time.
When you came back from Frankfurt, there was just German all over the place, and now it's Tokyo. Whatever next?
I think you know, I would have liked to have been a child who grew up in one of the countries where it's customary to speak a lot of languages, because I tend to be drawn. But then I'm so crap with remembering words. I only remember like a handful of token phrases.
I want some little morsels from you throughout the show, actually, because I reckon you've got a bit of a skill for accents and languages.
We might get some angry emails from our large Japanese listenership, though.
Well, absolutely, and why not? Absolutely. That would be fine. You know, if you want to complain about Mike, then you can email... No, there'll be no complaints today. So I would like you to periodically punctuate a few little bits of Japanese, because it's very convincing. Even if it means nothing at all, it certainly convinced me anyway. Plenty of... You realise bowing doesn't work on the radio.
No, but if I bow on live radio, then, well, I'm not going to be, you know, called...
Anyone.
I'm not going to be called out on my appalling, you know, pronunciation.
This is the sound of Mike bowing on the radio.
That's right. Well, if I bow head first into a microphone.
Yes, that's
which would
it.
Have been a bad bow.
Moving swiftly on. Right, plenty of news. Before we go to the rest of the world and talk about this is the Tokyo and simultaneously LA show special.
Stupid.
But there have been a few things happening around our neck of the woods that we should talk about before we go on any further. The first one being Opel. Now, that's a name, a car maker name, that should really get a few heckles up, because they have obviously recently announced that they are going to withdraw operations from Australia as of the announcement date. It was only a couple months ago. And this has left a lot of dealerships and a lot of people who have invested a lot of money, both the dealers and also people who have bought Opel, in the lurch. And we have discovered that the announcement is that they're going to go into a run-out sale of the remaining stock that's here.
Of sorts, yeah. And I think we should not be too unfair to Opel, because it turns out they actually were quite fair in the way that they reimbursed all their dealers and the people who bought cars. They can still get their cars fixed. They're probably their resale value is probably not as good as it was going to be. But they've held on to a bunch of cars. The terminology is on grass, which means when a car maker brings a bunch of cars into a factory, it leaves them parked until it can give them off to dealers. There's just been like a thousand or so Opels sitting there collecting dust for a few months. No one knew quite what to do with them. Do you send them to New Zealand? Do you sell them somewhere? What do you do? Well, Holden, who's the part of General Motors as his Opel, has taken them, and they're all going to be sold in a fire sale throughout Holden dealers. So soon at a Holden dealer near you, you can pick up a cheap Astra or Corsa or Zafira, or if you had your eye on an Opel, it might be a good time to go and have a chat to your Holden dealer.
Do you is it pretty widely known that they will be heavily discounted?
Well, they'd have to
or
be,
not.
Wouldn't they?
Well, you'd think so.
They'd have to be.
So is there a bargain out there?
Because they're decent cars.
They are decent cars. And we had that OPC, both the Insignia and the Astra, which were both fantastic cars. And I don't know, I'm a bit
tempted, they have to be serviced for 10 years, legally. Legally, General Motors must service them for 10 years. There's no danger there. You're fine.
So this will be at Holden dealerships?
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I'd look into it if I was a new car buyer interested in something a bit European, a bit quirky, a bit out there.
Well, there you go. Speaking of Holden dealerships, there is a very good Holden that is sold in the US under the Chevrolet badge, and it's called the SS.
When you say sold, Dan, they're not selling very many, are they?
Well, now, good, excellent. I'm pleased you said that, because that sort of bolsters my point quite nicely. It's now known that even the major dealers in the US are only taking 2 of the SSs each.
And you might be wondering
is that the correct plural?
You might be wondering, why are we talking about an American car on an Australian radio show? It's because the Chevrolet SS is of course the Holden Commodore, and it's the first time a Commodore has been exported to America in a long, long, long time, since before the GFC. It made a big deal because we thought maybe this is a way Holden can continue to justify its production. It can export cars to America, and it's starting to do it, and they've only sold 60. 60,
oh,
and it hasn't started that well. Maybe it'll pick up as time goes by, but you got to say it's a bit of an underwhelming beginning.
So the suggestion is that because they've only taken 2, even at the major dealers, is that them just not trying very hard to sell them? And if that's the case, then is that kind of an insidious way of trying to sort of crumble the Holden empire?
Who knows? That would be something to investigate, Dan, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. The roving reporter, Dan Gardner, goes and finds out how the Yanks are trying to destroy Holden. There's a scoop for Fender Bender.
It's pretty controversial.
We'll keep you posted on that one. Another bit of news that came up this week was that, remember back in January, there was a tragic accident on the road where a woman was killed while driving a Volkswagen Golf, and at the time, there was a suggestion that the car may have been decelerated very quickly by a mechanical fault on the Monash Freeway.
Yeah, and of course this led to the massive, it was another news publication broke a story and it kind of exploded. And for a while then Volkswagen was in the news pretty much every day for a few weeks of people saying they're unreliable, they're death traps, blah, blah, blah. And at the time you sort of thought to yourself, ooh, is this a bit dodgy? Is this a bit of a beat up? And how bad are Volkswagen cars really? And it led to a few big wide-scale recalls, but now we're going back to the horrible incident that started all of this, and there was a finding from the coroner's court this week that really took us back to square one.
Yes, in that they said the announcement was there is no systemic fault with the car that could have caused that accident.
So,
and actually, what they have also said is it's probably far more likely to do with the fact that they can prove that the person involved was actually on their phone at the time of the incident.
A tragic incident. But what it did do is it did highlight issues with other Volkswagens that were subsequently recalled. So, looking back at it in hindsight, you could say, well, maybe they were too harsh as a result of one incident, but it highlighted other incidents. So,
yes.
It's a bit of a tough one.
Absolutely right. So
we've got some closure on it now, I think, which
precisely,
is
precisely, yeah. Well, but the recalls from Volkswagen go on, and the gearbox problems, yes, we'll watch this space. Let's keep the news a little bit lighter. In the Formula One racing, we don't really cover it very much on Fender Bender, but Formula One, a record was broken at the last F1 in the US when the Red Bull F1 team broke the pit stop record. It is now, astonishingly, under 2 seconds. 1.923 seconds.
It's amazing what you can achieve in less than 2 seconds if you try hard enough, isn't it?
It's all that bloody Red Bull. Mm. You know what I mean? I have a couple cans of Red Bull. You've got to peel me off the ceiling. I reckon I could change all 4 tyres on a Formula One car in under 2 seconds.
But seriously, how the hell do you change 4 tyres in 2 seconds?
Remarkable.
How? Is that even possible?
But of course, when they took out fuel stops from Formula One, all the pit stop times came tumbling down. But this is unbelievable. No one really could have... You can actually watch slow motion video of it online, and it is remarkable. It's like watching a machine, not just 20 people around an F1
well
car.
It's not quite owned by a German, but it is a German based team, and the Germans are paragons of efficiency, Dan.
Absolutely right.
If anyone was going to do this, it would be Germans.
I couldn't agree
more. Italians
are
too busy off having a dart in the back of pit lane to do it, but the Germans are so efficient, they obviously are.
Speaking of efficiency, we will be back shortly. We're going to take a quick break, but lots more coming up. We're going to talk about the major motor shows going on around the world and a little bit more news and tons of... We've been driving a couple of interesting things also, haven't we, Mike? We're going to tell you a little bit more about that coming up. Yes, this is Fender Bender. You're with Mike and Dan in the studio. Joy 94.9. Welcome back. We are talking all things motoring. And well, before the break, we had a little bit of news. But now we're going overseas, Mike. We're going overseas. Well, at least you were actually overseas. I had to stick around and hold the fort, which I'm happy to do. But I want to know everything that happened in Tokyo. Well, not everything, because you know what they say. You know, everything that happens in Tokyo stays in Tokyo. Tell us about the cars, Mike. What was going on? There were some amazing things that were going on show at the Tokyo International Motor Show. It was remarkable. I was seeing the pictures, but what was it like firsthand?
Yes, that most famous saying, you know, most famous of sayings, what happens in Tokyo stays in Tokyo. No, look, it's one of the world's most well-known motoring shows. Japan, of course, is home to some of the world's biggest car makers. And, you know, there's been a bit of an austere vibe about Tokyo over the last few years that it's been held because the Japanese market is maybe not quite the dominant power that it once was.
Right.
But this year, it was a lot of sort of magic dust in the air because there's sort of this feeling that maybe some of the Japanese car makers have turned a corner again and they're actually starting to do interesting things like they did in the 90s, back when they were sort of the up-and-comers of the automotive world. And that was sort of reflected on the stands there. There was a bit of optimism in the air, perhaps not quite the pomp and circumstance of 20 years ago, but nonetheless. And I suppose there were a few notable highlights there. For me personally, there was a Nissan concept car that was available. We knew Nissan were planning some sort of sporty coupe, but we didn't quite know what it was. And it turns out it's this very strange, almost retro Datsun-esque tiny rear drive turbocharged coupe.
Now, this is the IDX.
Lowercase
I, capital D, lowercase.
Seriously,
X.
How many companies can continue to use the lowercase I?
I know.
Ridiculous.
Come on.
And they've said it's designed for digital natives, which is a kind of wanky way of saying young people. And
digital natives. Is that seriously the
expression?
Well,
it's not an Nissan term. It's a widely spoken term, but it's very wanky.
That is vile.
It is. But I guess if you look at this kind of previews Nissan's eventual answer in time when it gets produced to the Toyota 86.
This is an absolutely delightful little car. When I saw the pictures of this, I was talking to the good people at Nissan Australia on a launch this week, and I actually said to them, look, if you announce you're going to build this and it comes to Australia, I will absolutely have one. It is such a delightful little thing. I'm not sure how much will remain from the concept version. As always, there are styling things that fall by the wayside when it comes from a concept to a production model. But how can you cock this up? This is such a lovely looking little thing. As you say, it's got remnants of old cars. It's got futuristic styling traits in there. It's just got it all. But not only has it got it all, they also showed a Nismo version, didn't they?
They did. And they're really pushing the Nismo thing now. It's their AMG or their, you know, STI that would be the Subaru. Their STI, that came out rather wrong. In Subaru.
Talking about
STI.
That magic dust and things that should stay in Tokyo.
Yes, well, anyway. But yeah, they're really pushing this performance angle, and they've got a bunch of Nismo cars now, and that's one of them. And interestingly, touching on performance cars, I was actually in Tokyo principally to drive a bunch of Honda prototype cars. The most exciting of those was the prototype Civic Type R, which is a name that's been missing from the automotive lexicon for some time. Of course, it was one of the original hot hatches, and it's been discontinued for a few years. And in that time, the hot hatch market has gone bonkers. You know, the new Golf GTI's come out, and there's a heap of other rivals out there. Focus ST is a notable one. And Honda's been missing, and it's this complaint that Honda's kind of lost some of that sportiness and premium edge that it once had, and they set me and some of my colleagues loose on their Tochigi test track, and we went bonkers in a prototype. They say is 2 years away from reaching our shores, even though it felt completely road ready.
Hang on, what can they need to do?
I'm utterly mystified as to why it's still 2 years away, but they are a conservative company. What? But nonetheless, this is the first turbocharged performance Honda.
Yes.
Six-speed manual gearbox, suspension revision that they kept a bit quiet on. But my God, this thing was unbelievable. They should put it on the road right now, and it would be one of the best hot hatches you could buy, if not the best.
I suppose the suggestion is that if they do hang around for another 2 years, that gives everyone else out there making hot hatches 2 years to get as good as it. So
That's exactly right. It's
a case of, you know, strike while the iron's hot. But on the other flip side of it, I will say that if they do wait 2 years, we'll know that that thing won't put a foot wrong. I think a lot of the time manufacturers just want to get that product out there as quickly as possible for exactly the reasons we specified before, and in doing so, they risk little gremlins staying in the system. If they do hang on for another 2 years, then we know we'll get a pretty damn good product, which the Type R's always have been, flawless, effectively.
It would want to be, Dan. They're making us wait too long, damn it.
Well, no, you've driven it. I'm the one who should be complaining.
I got, yeah, well, that's true. What can I say to that?
Yeah, so Honda there. But while you were with Honda, you actually drove something else that was a little bit interesting, didn't you? Not a performance-focused vehicle. This was something quite the opposite.
Yeah, you might have, if you're a regular listener, you might recall us having spoken about cars such as the Renault Twizy. In Europe, they're called quadricycles. They're a tiny sort of half car. Think about maybe a bastard child of a golf cart, a bike, and a tiny hatchback. They're a very strange,
what the hell does that
a very strange four-wheeled contraption.
And how does that bastard
generally
get made?
Generally, where you sit in tandem, and it's got a small EV motor, electric motor. Anyway, these cars are becoming not ubiquitous. Is that the wrong word? But they are becoming increasingly common in Europe. Honda has teased its own version, and it's called the MCB. And look, it's a very fun little tiny runabout. The interesting thing is they're saying they're actually going to start testing it on the roads in Japan pretty much now. And by 2016, they believe that there will be a new part of the Japanese motor regulation that allows people without a car license to actually drive one of these on the road, sort of halfway between a motorcycle and a car.
Wow.
And my God, you really, a Civic Type R is great fun, but there's something about an open air, super powerful, almost golf cart type car that's kind of more fun again.
And so they're pure electric. This can only be charged up at home or at a charging point.
But you drive around a super city, I should say, like Tokyo, and you see charge points absolutely everywhere, and rapid charge points that can, you know, give you a start of juice in no time whatsoever. And with a range of 80 kilometres, I mean, that sort of vehicle, you're not going to drive that for 80 kilometres a day. It's an inner city commuter only. So that's where EV makes sense. On cars like that, anything bigger, it starts to kind of lose its edge.
And you're a tall chap. You fat in it properly, did you?
I fat in it indeed, yes. I am a tall chap, but it's also an absurdly high-roofed contraption, which makes it a bit kind of wobbly in the corners.
You didn't manage to roll it.
But in a fun sort of way.
I mean, is this... we look at Japan as really, whether it be right or wrong, leading the way. California also very good in environmentally friendly vehicles. Do you think that this is one of the main places that a true evidence of... infrastructure will come out of Japan and also maybe California and Germany to an extent to prove that these sort of machines will work?
Look, frankly speaking, everywhere that isn't Australia is kind of doing it better than Australia is.
oh dear.
The more you travel, the more you see that there's charge points in most cities now. There are government subsidies, all these sorts of things going on that we just don't have. But Japan is where it makes the most sense because you're never going to drive more than a few Ks a day. The traffic is absurdly bad. And, you know, because there's so many cars about, they do tend to be pollution issues. So that's where... those sorts of cars make perfect sense.
Through necessity, I suppose.
But it couldn't be sold in Australia because it's not the right regulations. However, in time, maybe. And we'll put a picture up on the Facebook, and I'm very curious to know from all you listening out there, would you consider driving one of these if you live in the inner city of, say, Melbourne or Sydney or one of the other big cities? Would you consider driving this tiny golf cart-style car?
What do you think it's going to take to change regulation before we get cars like this? I mean, there's quite major sort of safety concerns, I think, because, you know, they're such a small, you know, you imagine in a crash up against one of the big SUVs that people love in Australia, that sort of little Twizy style thing is not going to do very well.
It's only because every soccer mum in Paran drives a BMW X5.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that comes down to it's a cultural thing.
Everybody was in a tiny little car, then it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
But as long as everybody insists on buying these absurd monoliths on wheels, well, it's going to be a problem.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of things that we should put on our Facebook page, there was one other car that launched in Tokyo, which was a Lexus.
Twas.
And was it the RC Coupe? Excuse me, I got a little bit emotional when I said
that. Yes, an RC Coupe. Facebook.com/FenderBenderJoy. We'll put some pictures up. Go and have a look. It's yet again another Lexus that has a controversial design. Very sort of over-styled Darth Vader-esque grille. They're really trying to sex up their image, and this is the car to do it. It's a BMW 3 Series Coupe, or now 4 Series Coupe rival. It's taking it up to the Germans, and it looks absolutely brilliant. And for once, they've actually made a production car that looks as good as a concept, which is something they haven't done in a long, long time, if ever. And this is a company that's really trying to lose the cardigan and put on a spiffy leather jacket, and it's really doing it, and the evidence is right there in front of us.
Not all of their cars that they've launched recently in the concept department have been quite so beautiful, have they, really?
No, there's the NX SUV, which is a horrendous mistake. I actually managed to interview one of their chief designers, and it was all I could do to withhold, making a statement rather than asking a question.
Oh,
let's
God.
Just say that.
Well done for biting your tongue,
yes,
Mike. By that very action, it probably means we're still on air. Who knows, we could have been taken off the air. We are going to have to go off the air for just a couple of moments, but we will be back very shortly to continue talking about all the things going on in the world. LA Motor Show coming up very shortly. Back to the topic at hand, we were discussing before the last break, Tokyo Motor Show, where you, your good self, were indeed, Mike, absorbing the... I don't even know whether that made sense. Did that, I don't know.
That was almost Yoda-esque.
You were there with the lovely Tim Nicholson, discovering what was happening in the world of motoring. There was a couple of new things that we had to talk about also. Now, we mentioned Nismo previously because of that wonderful little IDX coupe thing that they've done, but they've also unveiled Nismo versions of the... wonderful GTR, the most spectacular car. Currently, until very recently, held the Nürburgring record. Now they've announced the Nismo version that we haven't quite got confirmation whether it's going to come to Australia yet, have we?
Of the GTR?
Yes.
No, we haven't. And Nismo in general, we don't know if it's coming to Australia. Any of the Nismo products, none of them have been confirmed.
Surely it's only a matter of time.
Well, maybe, but Nissan do some strange things here sometimes. But the GTR is already one of the world's fastest cars. In fact, it was the equal world's fastest car. And this new one is about 5% more powerful than the old one, so it's going to be even quicker.
And they've stripped weight out of it as
well,
haven't
they? So it's frankly just outrageous. It is absolutely outrageous.
I actually, again, talking to Nissan just this week, and they said that the day that they announced the Nismo GTR in Tokyo, they had 5 people in Australia ring up Nissan Australia and say, I'll have one. Even though there was no announcement that it's ever going to come to Australia. They've already said I'd like
one. You think
one.
About it, if it came here, it would be about $200,000 probably, mm-hmm. which is a lot for a Nissan. But then again, it is faster than a Bugatti Veyron, which is 10 times as expensive.
That is absurd.
It is the world's fastest production car, bar none. There's nothing that can top it.
That makes me a very happy person.
You could
indeed.
Never pull up at a set of traffic lights and know that you wouldn't win. You would win against anything. Probably even a superbike.
That we encourage drag racing from the traffic lights, or at least if we do, it is in a sensible manner up to the speed limit.
You can drive from 0 to 60 in rapid form, Daniel.
You sure can, and that GTR will get you there very quickly. Now, the other thing, may possibly wear a Nismo badge, is one day perhaps the Pulsar.
The humble Pulsar. This was actually shown at the LA Motor Show, not at the Tokyo Motor Show, overnight. And they call it the Sentra in America. It's a Pulsar sedan, as we know it here. Yeah. They're going Nismo crazy, and everything they're doing has a Nismo badge on it now. And this one, they've kind of copied the Mercedes A-Class AMG with the front design. They've got the mesh grill with the red piping underneath it, which looks kind of cool.
Does look lovely.
If a little derivative. But look, hey, it's a sexy Pulsar, a hardcore Pulsar. The problem with the current Pulsar Triple S is it's got a great engine, but it handles like a piece of stale custard. It just kind of it just wanders all over the road because they haven't done anything to the suspension or the dampers or the brakes or anything else, really.
And Nismo, we know how good they are at sorting out their chassis and handling packages.
Exactly right. This thing has 180 kilowatt. It's got all the makings of a very, very fine small performance car. And the other good thing is all the hot hatches out there are, as the name suggests, hatches. This is a sedan. It's a tiny, tiny sedan. If you want a small, hot sedan, you don't have that many options, except for maybe the WRX, which is not quite the magic that it once was. So, hey, do it, Nissan. Just do it.
Sticking with the Japanese manufacturers, we are in Tokyo still. Another little nice unveiling, quite literally an unveiling from Toyota and their 86 Cabriolet.
Well, yes, we've seen this before in Prototype Guys. It's still technically a concept. They still haven't decided if they're going to make it properly or not. It's a right-hand drive version. The only interesting thing about it is that it now has right-hand drive. It's still a concept. It's still a prototype. They still haven't decided if they're going to make the bloody thing or not.
Oh, come
God knows why, because it would just blow the Mazda MX-5 out of the water.
Well, it would.
In terms of price, at the very
absolutely
least.
Absolutely right, yeah.
So just hurry up and confirm it.
The other reason I'm very excited about the 86 Cabriolet is that it is a ragtop, or at least it appears to be a proper soft top, whereas the MX-5 that you were talking about earlier is now only available in Australia as a folding hardtop, which I think completely undermines the whole soul of a proper little sports car like that. So for me, it already wins, and I love the styling of it with that. And now I heard a rumour that it was always developed as a soft top. So if that is true, then why would you not eventually launch a soft top version of it?
Because I have no answer.
Exactly right. So on that note, we have to confirm that it is definitely going to be launched.
You heard it here first.
Whether we get it in Australia, yet to be confirmed. But we do love a Cabriolet here, and we do like a Toyota, and we're loving the 86 at the moment. So fingers crossed for that. Now, We did talk about the Pulsar that was unveiled in LA. Let's move to LA now. We'll just cross, you know, a few thousand kilometers of ocean and look at some of the things that were unveiled there. One of the things that excited me the most was, of course, the Porsche Macan. What a fabulous thing that is. Now, you love or hate... Yeah, okay, all right, Mike, we're going to be divided here. I actually don't mind a Porsche SUV. And I particularly like this cheeky new little number, particularly as they've now announced that the performance is going to be very nearly up with the Cayenne.
Yeah, but it's a bloody SUV, isn't it? Who cares?
But it's a great... Look, who
are the sort of people that are going to drive a small Porsche SUV? Are they the sort of people that you want to have a beer with in a pub? No.
All right, okay.
Not at all.
All right, We have to remain divided on our opinion here. But I like the way it looks. Perhaps I'm just a sucker for that gold badge.
A car is defined by the people who drive it.
Well, I don't drive a Porsche, so does that make me a good or a bad individual?
If you drove a Porsche Cayman, you would be a fabulous human being. And you already are fabulous, but you'd be even more fabulous. But if you drove a Porsche Macan, you would be the sort of person that I would run 100 miles in the other direction if I saw you.
Really? Can you really? Can you?
The Cayenne is the king daddy of the SUV world. And I suppose that has a certain kind of charm to it. But the Macan, it's not even the top. It's not even a supercar of SUVs, a la what a Porsche should be. It's just kind of a mid-range SUV.
This is a huge topic that we
Porsche.
Could talk about. That, you know, can you judge a book by its cover? Can you determine a person by the car that they drive?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yes, you can.
I drive a BMW when I'm not driving. When I'm in a press car, does that mean what can you deduce about my nature?
Dan, we all know that you are just the world's greatest person by a long way.
There you go. You heard it here first. All BMW drivers currently listening to
Fender. I just want to come back on the show, so I'm just sucking up.
I'm only at the helm this week. Don't worry about it. All you have to do is keep Tim happy. He'll be back next week. Tim, of course, you'll be listening on the way back from the airport. Hello. Good to hear you.
I don't think we're going
to
hear him respond.
Oh, really?
He might call.
He might shout.
He might, you know, give us a call, maybe.
Also in LA. Now, this will be a big favourite with Joy listeners, I'm sure. The new Mini. What a cracking little thing that is. It's grown. It's not quite so mini anymore.
And it wasn't that mini to begin with, really, was it? I mean, and this is the thing with mini, is they're not... It's kind of a misleading bit of nomenclature, because they're not that small anymore. They're big. They're kind of overweight.
They're growing, yeah.
And at least this is the mini hatch. It's the really annoying minis are the big, porky SUV ones. This is at least a proper mini, as it should be. There was actually one of these on the stand in Tokyo, and I had a bit of a poke around, and I've got to say, the cabin does feel like it's better made. There is better quality there, but it doesn't have much difference in terms of the way it looks. It's styled very similarly. And the car itself, externally, you couldn't pick it from the old Mini unless you were a real eagle eye.
Yeah.
So it's a new car underneath. It's got brand new 3-cylinder turbo engines, and it'll no doubt drive beautifully because the current one does as well. But it doesn't really look or feel a whole lot different to the current one.
I think that is absolutely a case of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, people love the look of the Mini. It's always done that very well. You know, it's kept a bit of the old and introduced a bit of the new. And yeah, absolutely. I think if they'd come back with a very different looking Mini, then they lost a lot of custom. So absolutely right move, I would say. Update the technology underneath. Keep it competitive that way. I don't doubt that it'll drive beautifully. And the outside is still the same old Mini that we've learned to love.
Now, the Mini was a good reveal, no doubt, but it doesn't quite take out the crown as the best in show, because the best in show is clearly the new Jaguar F-Type Coupe.
Coupe.
It starts with a C.
What? You're still jet lagged, Mike.
Yes.
Even though it's the same time zone. And you don't get jet lagged.
Excuse I use. Coupe. Of course, Jaguar revealed the F-Type as a cabriolet, and it sort of pitched as a successor to the E-Type, the legendary E-Type. For mine, it never quite lived up to the challenge. It's a good car, but it's no Porsche Boxster to me. Good car, not a great one. But my God, they have knocked this coupe out of the park. It is quite unbelievable how amazing this car looks. Where the cabriolet looks good, this looks unbelievable.
I are going to have to agree on this.
The jaw just hit the floor of every motoring journalist in the land when they saw it, when they saw the pictures first revealed. I mean, this thing is just stunning.
Now, is it going to be one of those cars that looks just as good in person, or I suspect it's going to be one that looks even better? I think Jag, the styling that they've been coming out with lately, particularly sports cars, is even better in the flesh. I remember this when I saw the F-Type Cabriolet at the... Motor Classica. Yes, and I just remember being blown away by that. So if it can have the same effect on me in Coupe Guys...
Well, good news, Dan, is there was also one in the Tokyo stand, and I did see one with mine own eyes, and yes, it looks every bit as good in the flesh as it does.
Was it in that lovely white colour that press shots are? Oh,
and... Seriously, words can't express it. We'll put a picture up, facebook.com/FenderBenderJoy. Decide for yourself. Let us know what you think. But speechless.
Absolutely gorgeous. Wonderful. Nice to see a good blend of all the different cars coming out of Tokyo. We've had some interesting practical cars. We've had electric sort of global saving ones. And now we've had some of the exotic ones for complete petrolheads like us. Lots more to discuss. Stay with us on Fender Bender. You're on Joy 94.9. We'll be back in just a few moments. Nearly time to go, but we do have just a little bit more time to talk on Fender Bender. You're with oh, I nearly did my breakfast show then, didn't I? Old habits die hard. No, you're not with Han and Dan. I've just taken this opportunity to plug Weekend Extend on Monday mornings. You're with Mike and Dan on Fender Bender.
I'm not going to pretend for a minute that you didn't mean that.
Yeah,
unintentional slip.
Oh dear, what could I do? Advertising more great programming. Yes, we are with Mike and Dan, and we're talking about the motor shows. We've covered virtually everything there is to talk about so far.
Miraculously, because we've lost the ability to talk.
I am struggling to get through the final 10 minutes of the show, but we do have a couple more important things to talk about, Mike, don't we? One was, of course, the unveiling in LA of the new Subaru WRX. The iconic getaway from the police car, the iconic rally car. It is good for so many things, and in the hands of a complete idiot, it is a wonderful car to drive. I speak from experience. We have a new one.
It's very, very fully sick, Dan.
It sure
is. No doubt about it.
But it's not as fully sick as we were expecting, because the one that they unveiled is not in World Rally Blue, and it doesn't have gold wheels. It looks a little bit more normal.
It is weird. They revealed this fabulous-looking concept car recently, and as Subaru tends to do, the road version isn't quite as good. They kept saying during development, Subaru, that this was not going to be just an Impreza with a big spoiler and some wheels on it, like all the ones before it have been. It kept saying that, you know, this is going to be something different. It's going to be a standalone model. And they revealed it, and the anticipation was huge, and it's an Impreza with a set of wheels and a spoiler on it. Don't know why they played us like they did. However, this still is almost the car of choice for a certain sort of driver, and it started the whole all-wheel drive rally car racer for the road revolution, and it's returned in an all-new guise, and that alone makes it a bloody exciting car.
I like returning in all-new guise.
I bet you do, Dan.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, that it is completely understated, because you know what I look at a WRX as? I see it as a blank canvas. How many of those do you reckon are going to go on the road and remain standard?
Well, and that's exactly it. And Subaru never needed to say that it was going to mess with the formula, because the formula didn't need to change to begin with.
It's quite
perfect what they've done. You know, it could have slightly bigger fenders, and it could, you know, be a bit more outrageous maybe, but hey... it looks pretty good on paper, and it's going to be in Australia pretty soon. They're fast-tracking it down under. The head of Subaru has confirmed they're going to fast-track it down here, because we are an extremely important market to Subaru globally. It's going to be here in a matter of months, and I'm starting to get pretty excited about having a bit of a spin of this thing.
Absolutely right. It's 200 kilowatts, isn't it, I think, in standard trim? Thereabouts.
Somewhere around that, there and thereabouts. It'll more powerful than the old one, and there'll be an STI one revealed in a couple of months, which
of
will be
course.
Even more hard.
We all like a... I was going to say, more often than not, you like the STIs to remain under wraps, but in this instance, we want to see them. Mike is remaining completely silent on this matter. Is there something we need
not
to talk about after
it.
The show? Yeah, okay, all right. Just leave it alone. There's a powder you can use. I'll talk to you about it after the show.
Good.
This is not broadcast.
I'm glad we can have this talk on live radio.
But the true technicalities to the WRX, the thing that I always get really excited about when they bring out a new WRX, is that transmission. The engine is one thing, but it's also the way it gets its power to the ground that is so wonderful. That four-wheel drive system, all kinds of clever diffs and technology.
And
in
a six-speed manual now rather than a five-speed manual.
Honestly, what has got a five-speed manual? I could jump in a car, a press car with a five-speed manual the other day. I'm not going to tell you what it was, because it's a bit embarrassing for the maker. But I thought, honestly, what has only
the
five
car in
gears?
Question is a Peugeot 2008. And I have no shame in saying it and calling Peugeot out on its crappy gearbox. However, the WRX also comes with the option of a CVT.
Historically
known for being the transmission for motoring enthusiasts.
Now,
let's not judge it. Let's drive it first. Let's see if a paddle shifter CVT can really bring the game like it needs to.
Because I've always thought this about CVT gearboxes. At their core, there is a great idea. But so far, no one has ever really been able to get the best out of it. So, yeah, exactly. Subaru have got CVTs in the Liberty. They've got them in a lot of their cars. And they don't work that badly, I have to say. And I really hate a CVT. So if they can just improve on that a little bit, then maybe we'll have our star.
I think car makers need to realise that CVTs are for just regular transport, and double clutch transmissions a la the Volkswagen DSG is what you need for a performance car.
Because if you look at one of the WRX's competitors, the Mitsubishi Evo, that auto version has a double clutch gearbox, and it might not be the best example of one, but it does work.
Look, that car is as old as Methuselah and about as relevant. However, it does have a fantastic transmission, and that's the sort of thing Subaru probably needs.
Yes.
That being said, the new Rex looks like a big step up on the old one in most departments, and hopefully it could be a bit of a renaissance for Subaru in the performance market, because it has kind of lost its mantle of late.
Looking a little bit further afield, we're going to leave the Japanese alone now, Mike. We're going to move on to something a bit European. Mercedes has featured a few interesting cars at the shows, but the one that we're really excited about is the GLA. Not any normal GLA, it is the AMG version of the GLA.
Yeah, we've seen the AMG version before we even have the regular one in Australia. The regular GLA, of course, is based on an A-Class, but picture one that's a bit higher riding and has a bit of a crossover SUV type body on it.
Yep.
That market is going crazy. Everybody's buying small SUVs because they ride a bit higher and you get to have a higher driving position. And the GLA, I can attest from having seen it myself overseas, looks fantastic. One of the best looking small SUVs there are. It'll be about $45,000 in Australia soon. We know Mercedes has this bonkers 2-litre turbocharged engine. It's the most powerful four-cylinder in the world, bar none. Hand-built, it's in the A45 AMG, it's in the CLA 45 AMG, and now it's in the GLA 45 AMG. 10 points for original naming Mercedes, but
consistent,
this
if nothing
engine,
else.
Man, I've driven this engine in a lot of different circumstances, and it is one of the greatest engines going around at the moment. If you're going to have a crossover SUV, it may as well be a GLA 45. That's
It'll be expensive.
It will. The A45 and the CLA are about $75,000-$95,000 a piece, and this will probably be in that ballpark. But hey, Mercedes, if you want to see how a premium brand can move down market while maintaining that premium edge, look no further, because it's introducing all these lower, smaller, cheaper cars than it's ever had before, and yet it's still sort of the pinnacle of the German car makers. So they've done an amazingly good job with that. The GLA 45, we already know it's going to be a cracker because we've already driven all the components in its other models. So it'll be a good thing.
Fingers crossed. I can't wait to get behind the wheel of one. But Mercedes haven't. That's not the only car they've unveiled at LA, is it? They've done something else that was actually more about style than anything else. It is one of the most outrageous cars I think I've seen in a very long time. It is mirrored. And I don't mean it's got, like, you know, the same half and half symmetrical. That's, you know, most car makers do that. I mean, its bodywork is a mirror. It is the most flamboyant sculpt. It looks like a bit of sea life. It looks like a whale cross. It is called the Mercedes Grand Vision, and it is purely a styling exercise. But I just hope from the bottom of my heart they one day make a car that looks even half like this, because it is outrageous.
Well, we all know why a mirrored car appeals to you, Dan. Because you can just check yourself out from all the right angles.
You bitch. You absolute bitch. I'm only letting it go because it's true.
Correct. However, you're right. This car looks amazing. Haven't seen it in the flesh. The pictures, though, wow. But I don't know quite why Mercedes has made it. I think it's a case of Mercedes saying, hey, we have a lot of money to spend the 90p. Yeah. Let's make something that looks awesome.
Quite possibly. But as we say with concept cars every time, that if they can do it, if you set that standard, the outrageous far end of the spectrum over there somewhere, then sooner or later you get to a point closer and more feasible and more likely to find its way into a production car that may well actually happen.
Facebook.com/FenderBenderJoy. Let us know what you think of this outrageous creation. It'll be up soon. And yeah, bring it on. And
if
it becomes a poster on the wall of a kid out there and inspires him to have a love of cars, and it damn well probably will, it's worth it.
Absolutely right. Couldn't have said it better myself, Mike. Speaking of wonderfully beautiful things, it's time for these two wonderfully beautiful things to leave the studio for another week. Thank you for joining us on Fender Bender. It's been lovely having your company if you've been listening. It gives me great pleasure to say that the wonderful Tim Nicholson will be back at the helm next week. But until then, thank you for listening. Safe driving. This has been Fender Bender. Sayonara.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.